This is a Texas Matters special report, The Battle Over the Ballot Box, Security or Suppression. I'm David Martin Davies of Texas Public Radio. The Republican-controlled Texas legislature is working to pass a historic sweeping overhaul to the ways that elections are run in Texas. They say this is necessary for election security or to restore public confidence in elections. Democrats and voting rights activists dispute that. They point to what's in the bills, and they say this will make voting more difficult for certain demographics, which historically support Democrats. And that's the real motivation. In this hour, we're going to sift through the facts, testimony, the historic record, and pick through these proposed laws to help you answer the question, is this battle over the ballot box for security or suppression? So what triggered all of this? Let's take a look at the last election. It wasn't that long ago, November 3rd, 2020.
It's election night in America, and a nation in crisis is at a crossroads.
We're counting down.
On election night, Donald Trump was in the hunt for the 270 electoral votes he needed to reclaim the White House, and he was within striking distance.
I want to thank the American people for their tremendous support. Millions and millions of people voted for us tonight.
But Democratic nominee Joe Biden was also closing in on 270, and he was counting on the late returns from counting mail-in ballots, especially in key states of Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Georgia, and that would put him over the top.
We believe we're on track to win this election.
Yes.
And that's what happened. Georgia and Arizona, two typically Republican states, flipped to the Democrats. But what about here in Texas? There was speculation that the Lone Star State and its 38 electoral votes would turn blue, but that didn't happen.
Here it is 12-11, and the state of Texas has finally been called.
Trump won Texas with 52% of the vote, which is about where Trump did 4 years earlier. And for Texas state races, a predicted strong showing by the Democrats, that didn't happen either. Overall, Republicans had a good outcome. And according to the Texas Secretary of State's office, Director of the Elections Division, Keith Ingram, while testifying to the House Elections Committee, the system for elections in Texas worked very well.
I am happy to report that Texas elections are in good shape. Last year was very challenging in a number of respects. Obviously, presidential elections are the largest turnout and most visible elections that we do. In any ordinary year, a presidential election would be a big deal. It would feature high turnout and much scrutiny. However, in 2020, there was the added complication of a global pandemic with which election officials had to contend. The elections in Texas last year were a success. The governor extended early voting by a week in order to spread out voters, and this resulted in, as well as the high level of interest on the part of the voters, 87% of voters who voted last year voted early. Notwithstanding the extraordinarily high turnout, the counties reported their results earlier than normal. In spite of all the circumstances, Texas had an election that was smooth and secure. Texans can be justifiably proud of the hard work and creativity shown by local county election officials.
Did you catch that? He said the election in Texas was smooth and secure. It should be noted also that Texas had a strong voter turnout. 61% of eligible voters in Texas voted. However, that still ranks Texas number 44 in the nation for turnout. Oklahoma, they're dead last. During the election, there was a lot of noise about the threat of voter fraud. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick even put a bounty on it.
Tonight, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick offering up $1 million in rewards for folks that come forward to report voter fraud. Patrick says he supports the president's efforts to identify voter fraud, this despite no substantial evidence to support the claims. Lieutenant Governor put out a statement saying in part, quote, "When all legal votes are tallied and all illegal votes discarded, then America can have a greater level of confidence in the election process." No word, though, where this money for the reward is coming from.
It doesn't matter where that money was coming from because Patrick never paid out a nickel. And recently, when asked about that reward, he refused to respond. To be clear, there have been zero arrests in Texas connected to election fraud in the November 2020 election. But according to Governor Greg Abbott, changing the way that Texas conducts elections is one of his top priorities, as he explained in the State of the State address in February.
One thing that all of us should agree on, whether you are a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, is that we must have trust and confidence in the outcome of our elections. That is why election integrity will be an emergency item this session.
That legislative emergency item resulted in a number of bills, but most notably Senate Bill 7 and House Bill 6, two omnibus bills that are packed with ways that will change how we vote in Texas. Both bills have been roundly criticized by voting rights activists as an attack on Texas suffrage, and we're going to get into that. But first, let's hear from the author of SB 7, Republican Texas Senator Brian Hughes.
I want to make Texas elections easy to vote and hard to cheat.
In this interview, I asked Hughes to explain what's in the bill, and he gives a long, detailed answer, which we didn't want to cut down for the sake of fairness, but there's also a lot that he didn't mention, and those are the parts of the bill that opponents largely object to, and more on that later.
If you're in line when the polls close, this law makes it clear that even for early voting, you get to vote. You're not going to be turned away. You will get to vote. That's been a law for election day voting since the 1980s, but it's never been expressly stated for early voting. You know, back in the 80s, everybody voted on election day. We didn't have a lot of early voting. So anyway, that's in the bill. We also have a paper backup system so that folks who cast their ballot on an electronic voting system, there'll be a paper trail, an auditable paper trail. So if we need to do a recount, we can know we got the numbers right. That electronic voting is frustrating for a lot of folks because there's no way to verify that your vote was actually cast. Also, many people have told us that when they apply for a mail ballot and then they receive it and send it back, through each step of that process, they don't know if the ballot's going to reach them in time. They don't know where it is. Was it sent? So Senate Bill 7 sets up a system where, just like you can track a package that's on its way to you that you've ordered online, you'll be able to track your ballot by mail. Only you. It's personal to you. You'll be able to track that ballot. Those are some of the provisions that that are supposed to make the process work better, make the process work smoother. There are provisions improvements we've made also to the system. For example, in a mail ballot, the law has said for a long time that folks who are 65 or over, folks who are disabled or who are going to be out of the county are entitled to vote by mail. That's been the law for a long time. We've heard testimony from prosecutors, from law enforcement, and I mean Democrats and Republicans, sworn testimony that those mail ballots are where most of the cheating is coming from. And so, in particular, there's been sworn testimony that these vote harvesters will mislead the voters, pressure the voters, and fill out the forms for them, et cetera. And so this bill says that Senate Bill 7 says when you sign the form requesting your mail ballot, if you're claiming a disability, the definition of disability will be on the form so you know what it means. And there's also a warning that falsifying this claim of disability is a state jail felony. Now, let me be clear. Falsifying that claim of disability for a mail ballot application is already a state jail felony. So we're not changing the law, but we're putting that warning in clear terms so people will know, so that these vote harvesters will have a harder time taking advantage of people. We also had to clarify some areas of the law because in Harris County, one county, one election, decided to rewrite the election code. And so they invented 24-hour voting. We've never had 24-hour voting in Texas. The evidence is that it was difficult to get election workers, difficult to get poll watchers when that was done. Harris County invented drive-through voting. It's never been even contemplated in Texas, anywhere that we're aware of, that we've been able to find. But in Harris County, they did that, one election, one county, and evidence is that the votes weren't counted accurately. They have more people who claim to have voted than they have votes, and that's something they're still trying to sort out. We also know that something fundamental like the secret ballot wasn't protected. Multiple people in the car, voting machines passed around, looking over one another's shoulders. Also, election workers and poll watchers weren't in place to make sure that that system followed the law and protected the voters. So part of Senate Bill 7 clarifies that here's the early voting hours, here's the way to get a mail ballot, here's how we conduct elections in Texas. You know, the legislature passes the election code, the counties implement that. They don't get to make up the rules as they go. Whether I like the changes they want to make or not, that's not how it works. Also, as far as the location of polling places, counties with populations of a million or more, some of those counties are run by Democrats, some are run by Republicans. But in those counties, Senate Bill 7 says that a partisan county government cannot use its power to stack the deck against the other party. And in particular, the placement of polling places. Senate Bill 7 says that those polling places have to be evenly distributed throughout the county based on voting population. And also, there's some systems in place to double and triple check the machines used for electronic voting. Senate Bill 7 puts these things in place where we can audit those machines, make sure they're working right, make sure they're counting properly. We also provide in all of our counties of 100,000 or more, we provide for live streaming of central counting when the votes are taken from the various polling places to central counting where they're counted. Some common sense reforms like that. Again, most of the reforms in Senate Bill 7 are aimed not so much at voters, but at vote harvesters, at the folks who cheat, the folks who try to intimidate, influence the voters, mislead the voters, you know, take their votes away from them. That's what Senate Bill 7 is mostly about. Boy, that was a long speech, but that's kind of an overview of
well, I didn't want to interrupt you. Wanted you to get it all out.
I hope it's helpful.
Yeah, it is. Talk about why all of this is necessary. We heard from the Texas Secretary of State's office that the last election, there was no problems. Everything worked out great, even in the challenging times of the pandemic. We heard from the Texas Association of Election Administrators, no problems. Same thing. Everything worked out great. The system works without a significant amount of fraud.
As you know, the legislature meets in Texas every 2 years, every other year. And so we take testimony over the interim, and then we come back in the session and we act on what we've learned, what we've heard from folks in Texas. So this is an ongoing process. I realize there's a national debate going on and there's stuff happening in Georgia and other states, but I want to be clear, Senate Bill 7 is about Texas elections. This is an ongoing process. And when we have Texans, Democrats, Republicans, when they come and testify about problems, then we try to address them. So I realize there's a big national discussion going on. Senate Bill 7 is not part of that. This is about Texas elections and improving the process like we try to every session.
There is concern. People have vocalized this, not just Democrats, but objective scholars of voting rights, and say that this is a voter suppression, that this will make voting harder, have a chilling effect on people who want to exercise their vote, and that, you know, in the pursuit of zero tolerance for voting fraud, that we're going to squeeze people out of voting.
I've heard that generalization. Yet I've not seen specific complaints about the provisions of Senate Bill 7. I'll say this about the generalized charge. We heard exactly those arguments 10 years ago when Texas adopted voter ID. You know what I mean by that, the photo identification for in-person voting. And during this debate, again, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years, but we were told this is going to depress the vote, this is going to discourage people from voting, this is voter suppression. What's the motive here? But what happened? We put voter ID in place, upheld by the courts, and turnout has gone up. So when voters know that the system is fair, that's secure, their vote's going to count, voters are going to show up. If voters lose confidence in the system, and that means left, right, center, wherever the voters live, however they vote, if voters lose confidence that our system is secure and accurate, that's going to affect turnout.
So there's a causation between putting in voter ID and turnout has gone up in Texas. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the naysayers told us turnout would go down and turnout went up. So that's the numbers are what they are.
All right. So that's a correlation, but there's no causation. And so
the numbers clearly went up, and the opponents of voter ID said the numbers would go down. In fact, they went up, and we believe there's evidence that, well, let me back up. Voter ID polls off the charts with Republicans, with Democrats. And again, especially over the last 10 years, folks have become more comfortable, more accustomed to it, and they're used to showing IDs anyway. But I don't want to quibble, but I want to make sure I'm clear on that point. So turnout has increased, not just in numbers, but in percentages.
Right. And there's a lot of reasons why that could be, not necessarily only because of voter ID.
Well, I don't know what all the reasons are. I just know that the opponents of voter ID said said turnout would go down, but turnout went up.
You said that there's a problem with confidence in our voting system. So let me ask you about your level of confidence in the voting system. Who won the presidential election?
Are you talking about 2020?
Yes, sir.
Well, Donald Trump, Republicans did great in Texas. If this were about Republicans winning or losing, this is obviously not about Republicans winning or losing. Republicans did great in Texas. President Trump carried Texas. Republicans held the Texas House and Senate, held every seat in Congress. And as you know, all of that was in much question during 2020. So the 2020 election cycle was the outcomes were good for Republicans. But this bill is about making the system work better for everybody. And when we see problems, we need to address them.
Yeah, and you say there's some sort of crisis of confidence in our system. You didn't answer the question, I mean, who won the election?
I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to be evasive. I'm sorry. Ask me the question.
Who won the election?
I'm sorry.
I mean, who won the presidential election?
Oh, well, Joe Biden's the president. I mean,
there's still people who say he's the president, but he's not the rightful elected president.
Time out. I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm really trying to understand. I didn't mean to argue with you. I'm sorry.
Did Joe Biden win fair and square?
I don't know what happened in every state. My focus is on Texas elections. Joe Biden's the president. I don't think there's any question about that.
So when you answer questions like that and you say, okay, and then there's a crisis of confidence in our elections and you say, well, why is that? You know, it's because of answers like that.
Well, what I said earlier was that if people don't have confidence that their votes are going to count and count accurately, that's going to depress turnout. I think that's axiomatic. Now, I don't know what the level of confidence is or should be, but we want to make it as high as we can.
Well, evidently it's not high enough for you because you're passing these bills, which will, and you say, you know, confidence is the issue to motivating you to do these things. And so there's got to be some sort of metric for the confidence and where should it be at?
Well, Texans coming to the legislature and testifying under oath, Democrats and Republicans, that's motivating us to address those concerns.
All right. And so you think this is all going to happen? This is going to end. These things will pass. Governor Abbott will sign them and we'll continue to have more and more people voting. Will voting continue to go up?
Well, I hope so. Good turnout is good for everybody. And again, let's talk. If you want me to put my partisan hat on, Republicans do great in Texas when there's more turnout. It's good for people to vote.
That was Texas State Senator Brian Hughes, a Republican who represents District 5, which is in East Texas. He's the author of SB 7, which along with HB 6 will overhaul voting in Texas. Opponents say parts of the bill will limit voting hours, cut back voting locations, criminally prohibit the sending out of unrequested mail-in ballot applications, require proof of medical need for voter assistance and for a mail-in ballot. And all of that, they say, will make voting more difficult. When we come back from the break, is it fair to call these new voting bills the new Jim Crow? This is a Texas Matters special report, The Battle for the Ballot Box, Security or Suppression. Stay with us.
On the next episode of TPR's Petri Dish, the CDC and the FDA call for a pause on the administration of the J&J COVID vaccine after a handful of women experienced dangerous blood clotting.
The incidence is extremely rare. It's less than 1 in 1,000,000.
We talked to one of the nation's top infectious diseases doctors who's right here in San Antonio about what this means. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Texas Matters special report on the sweeping overhaul of Texas elections, the battle for the ballot box, security or suppression. I'm David Martin Davies of Texas Public Radio.
Nothing has changed about Election Day voting in the election code.
That's Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. In a press conference, the Republican blasted Democrats, voting rights activists, and some corporations in Texas who call SB 7 voter suppression.
So I want to repeat this. Nothing has changed for mail-in ballots, election day, or early voting. And anyone who says different is lying to you, whether they write with a pen, talk with a microphone, or hold political office.
PolitiFact rates Patrick's claim that nothing has changed with SB 7 as pants on fire false. They found that SB 7 makes numerous changes to the state's election code, many of which pertain to the means which people can early vote. The major changes to early voting include limiting early voting hours and limiting the kinds of sites where people can vote early.
Anything I said here today, hold me to it. Everything I said today is true.
But that's not the only suspect thing that Patrick said at the press conference. He pointed out correctly that Texas offers more early voting days than some blue states.
So if somehow we're accused of being racist because we want to suppress the vote of people of color, I guess New York and New Jersey and Delaware are even more racist.
So let's compare Texas and Delaware. Biden's home state has been called the toughest blue state for voting. Delaware has online voter registration. Texas does not. All Delaware voters are asked to provide identification at the polls. A photo is not required. Texas has one of the toughest photo voter ID laws in the country. Delaware has no early voting days, but next year they begin to practice with 10 days, which is still short of Texas. Neither state has same-day voter registration. In Delaware, all registered voters automatically receive a request for a vote-by-mail application. In Texas, that doesn't happen, and SB 7 would make it a state jail felony for local election officials to distribute an application to vote-by-mail to a voter who didn't request one. Well, what does this all boil down to? In 2020, Delaware had about a 70% voter turnout. Texas had 60%. Also, in an independent study called The Cost of Voting in the American States 2020, Delaware was ranked 33rd for voting difficulty, and Texas came in 50th, last place.
As the state's cost of voting increases, the amount of voter turnout decreases.
Michael J. Palmonte is a co-author of the study. He's a political science professor at Jacksonville University.
More time and effort is required on the part of the citizen, and most will just disengage from the entire process and not contribute to casting their ballot.
Lieutenant Governor Patrick also objected to accusations that these voting restriction laws are racist.
You're questioning my integrity and the integrity of the governor and the integrity of the 18 Republicans voted for this. When you suggest that we're trying to suppress the vote, you are in essence between the lines calling us racist, and that will not stand. That will not stand.
Jim Crow 2.0, or Jim Crow in a tuxedo. That's what we're hearing now, and these are inflammatory terms used by some opponents to describe these voting restriction bills, like at this protest against SB 7 in Austin.
Ladies and gentlemen, vote for LBJ. Y'all remember how long ago that was? Here we are again, 56 years later, fighting for the same right to vote.
Don't miss the connection between what they did January 6th and their ideological sisters and brothers in state capitals across this nation, yeah, who are doing everything they can to ensure that only certain people vote. Those who are whiter, older, and wealthier.
Jim Crow was a set of post-Reconstruction laws in Texas and in the South that violently oppressed African Americans in their daily lives and prevented them from voting. Here's Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates.
What are you going to do? The 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments are ratified, right? So you can't get rid of them, but you could go around them. And starting in 1890 with something called the Mississippi Plan, there were state constitutions, which then unfolded over the next 16 years in each of the former Confederate states. And that's when they established poll taxes, literacy tests, comprehension tests that only a law professor could possibly understand.
Is it a fair comparison to call these new voter restriction bills the new Jim Crow? Jake Grumbach is a political scientist at the University of Washington.
Analogy to Jim Crow, I'd say it makes sense that people would apply that term because voter suppression right now, given the past generation of racial sorting of the electorate, where the parties have become more racially homogenous in their electorates, that means that it's easier to target through, for example, gerrymandering. One of the ways to best predict somebody's partisanship is through their racial identity. So a way to, gerrymander out the other party is to target voters of a particular race and other demographic characteristics like that. So there's certainly at the forefront, a racial dimension of state level democracy, and also just in many of the coalitions fighting against expanding access to voting themselves are seen pretty clearly against the idea of multiracial democracy in the U.S.
Grumbach says these restrictive voting laws follow a pattern. He says the Republican Party, despite losing elections, is not modifying its platform to appeal to a broader spectrum of voters because its current base won't allow it. That current GOP base is made of corporate interests who want low taxes and minimum regulation, but more importantly, it's also made up of rank-and-file voters who reject multiracial democracy. Grumbach points out that the real danger of disenfranchising a group of people, which happens to fall along racial lines, those people lose their access to government representation. Then they are chronically last in line when it comes to government services, spending for public health and education, and then also access to justice.
Small r, small d, Republican democracy is really premised on the idea that people's voices are heard by those in power, and people in power are responsive to the desires, interests, and attitudes of their constituents. So when you make it harder for some people to participate, you're going to make politics less responsive to them.
And also at that press conference, Lieutenant Governor Patrick called out specifically Beto O'Rourke for his opposition.
Senate Bill 7 is not voter suppression, it's voter security. And if Beto and Castro and Turner and Hidalgo and all these other folks out there protesting with their fists in the air that this is voter suppression, they're lying to you.
I spoke to the former El Paso congressman and Democratic nominee for Senate about these proposed bills.
Texas Republicans are doing their best, trying their hardest to stop people in this state from being able to vote and participate in our elections. And it's not just anyone in the state. It happens to be young voters. It happens to be Black voters and voters of color. It happens to be disabled voters. And it happens to be voters in big cities. And it happens to be voters who are shift workers in a state where the minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. It's the single greatest attack on voting rights in Texas in at least a decade. And when you connect it with what just happened in Georgia and the pending voter suppression legislation in 41 other state legislatures in this country, it's the single greatest attack on democracy and voting rights since the Voting Rights Act was signed into law in 1965 by President Lyndon Johnson. That's what's happening in Texas right now.
So when all these different states are doing this very similar thing, is this a organized, systemic way of trying to address what happened in 2020, the loss of Donald Trump?
You cannot help but see that Black voters in Georgia propelled Joe Biden's victory in that state in the Electoral College, the first for a Democratic nominee for president in decades. You can't ignore the leadership that those same voters showed in the surprise Senate runoff victories of Senator Raphael Warnock and Senator John Ossoff in January of this year. And you can't help but see in Texas, a state that is more voter suppressed than any other in the union. It's harder to vote here in Texas than it is in any other state, that despite those challenges, Black voters and voters in communities of color were able to overcome so many of these barriers and show up in record numbers and produce one of the greatest voter turnouts in Texas history. It's no accident that those things happened. And immediately following these elections, you have a very organized, very concerted effort to restrict access to the ballot and to try to stop Black voters and voters in communities of color and other voters from being able to fully participate in our democracy and choose our representatives and the course and direction that our state and our country will take.
How do you think this is going to play out? We do have a lot of Republican support for these bills, and Governor Abbott says he's going to sign them.
I take some hope in the precedent set in 2017 when the Republican-controlled legislature also tilted at a solution in search of a problem, and that was the bathroom bill, which sought to scare people about transgender children and vilify and demean and also scare those kids themselves, who are four times more likely, we now know, to take their lives or harm themselves when they're faced with that kind of pressure and stress and hatred. You know, everyday Texans, Republicans and Democrats and independents alike, not the people in elected office, but the people of Texas, got on down to the state capitol, and they drove the 8.5 hours from El Paso or the 6 hours from Nacogdoches or the 5 hours from Corpus Christi, and they made themselves heard. That compounded by the public pressure presented by Texas businesses who stepped up and stood out there, perhaps at some, you know, risk or cost to their bottom line to do the right thing. All of us together were able to prevail successfully upon the state legislature to stop, because it was going to hurt the most vulnerable Texans, because it was going to hurt us economically, because it just was not good for the state. I think all of those same things hold true for SB 7 and HB 6, the two bills in question right now. You have Dell stepping up once again. You have American Airlines stepping up to make sure that they make a stand for voting rights and against voter suppression. You have people making these same long drives, this time in the middle of a pandemic, to testify for the 2 minutes they get in front of the state legislature. I've been really inspired by the way that people have organized. It's so important that we ground our conversations, our reporting, and the debate on this issue in the facts. And when we do, I really do think you can shift public sentiment sufficient to produce the pressure necessary to create the political will to do the right thing. And by the way, and I'm sure you know this, there are Democrats in the state legislature certainly who oppose this. I bet every single one of them. There are also Republicans. I just read yesterday that Republican Representative Lyle Larson is opposed to this legislation. And I don't know that he's alone as a representative of that party in the state ledge. So I am, you know, I'm hopeful. And I don't think it's a done deal that we're going to be able to stop this. I just know that it's possible. And it's within our capacity to do this. And so we just got to keep on fighting.
Beto O'Rourke is a Democrat and a former congressman from El Paso. He is a vocal opponent to election overhaul bills in the Texas legislature. This is a Texas Matters special report, the battle over the ballot box, security or suppression. After the break, what's the connection between these voter reform bills and the January 6th Capitol insurgency? I'm David Martin Davies. We'll be right back.
I'm Yvette Benavides, host of the Book Public podcast. This week, we talked to Lori Woolever. She and Anthony Bourdain were planning to write a travel book together. After his untimely death, she made good on an implicit promise to complete the project. Look for Book Public wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to this Texas Matters special report, The Battle for the Ballot Box, Security or Suppression. I'm David Martin Davies of Texas Public Radio. It could be no accident that this historic wave of election overhaul bills come at a time when Texas demographics are hitting a tipping point. Here is the Texas state demographer Lloyd Potter testifying recently before the Legislative Redistricting Committee.
the Latino population is growing rapidly. It's almost in parity in 2020 with the non-Hispanic white population. We're forecasting that by the end of this year, 2021, or sometime in the beginning or middle of 2022, we'll have more Latinos in Texas than we have non-Hispanic whites.
The white population in Texas is about to become a minority as the Latino population continues to grow, according to Potter.
When we look over the decade, the contributions of each of these race ethnic groups to population change, you can see the Latino population contributed almost 52% of the population change, African American almost 15%, and non-Hispanic white being in the range of 40% of the total population, only contributing about 16.5%.
Texas leads the nation with a number of bills introduced that would restrict voting with 49 proposed laws. Georgia follows with 25. That's according to the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. Texas also leads the nation in the number of bills targeting voter purges, tightening voter registration, and limiting polling places. Not all will become law, but many of the restrictive bills have already advanced through the Texas legislature, meaning that a bill has already passed in at least one chamber or otherwise has been passed out of committee. But perhaps the most concerning but not receiving much attention are Republican-backed bills that give volunteer partisan poll watchers new extraordinary authority at polling sites. These are loyalists who labor for a candidate or a party, who are the eyes and ears during the voting to make sure that no fraud is taking place. The problem is sometimes exuberant poll watchers get in the way of voting and counting votes, and they've been accused of intimidating voters and poll workers. But now there are bills that would allow poll watchers to videotape voting, make it much more difficult for election judges to remove disruptive poll watchers, and give poll watchers the power to stop the voting process if they feel something is wrong with any voter's qualifications to vote. This is James Slattery from the Texas Civil Rights Project testifying about that.
Section 2 would give these agents of political campaigns a veto over whether people can vote based on their mere belief that there may be an irregularity, even one that falls short of violating any actual law. Only the presiding or alternate presiding judge can unlock this veto over voting. Judges may find themselves constantly being taken away from their duties in order to arbitrate disputes with poll watchers, while voters must stand there waiting helplessly in the meantime. Beyond the disruption to voting, such a power invites abuse.
Partisan poll watchers are not required to be trained or take a binding oath, and unlike poll workers who are trained and take an oath, poll watchers are not facing new felony penalties when they step out of line. During the hearings on election bills, one frequent witness was Scott O'Grady, who told the House Elections Committee that he was a partisan poll watcher in the Dallas area.
As a Purple Heart veteran who's been on the battlefield, I can personally testify that the right to vote is sacred, and it should be protected, especially by the Texas legislature. I support HB 3297 that would recognize that the theft of any citizen's vote is a crime. As a poll watcher, I witnessed systematic voter fraud in Dallas County in early voting at 5 separate locations.
If the name Scott O'Grady seems familiar, he was the rescued Air Force pilot that was shot down over Bosnia in 1995. He was on the cover of Time magazine, and his story was appropriated by Hollywood for the film Behind Enemy Lines.
We pretend we're in the middle of the fight, but we're not fighting, we're watching.
O'Grady sued the movie maker for defamation of character, and they settled out of court. The Trump White House nominated O'Grady to be Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, but that nomination stalled when it became known that O'Grady, in a radio interview, called former President Barack Obama and some military generals sworn socialist. After the November election, he tweeted multiple conspiracy theories that the election was stolen, and he tweeted support for Trump to declare martial law. Do you really want Scott O'Grady deciding if you should be allowed to vote? The concern by voting rights activists is that partisan poll watchers could be weaponized to use their new authority to challenge voters, which would slow down voting to a crawl in precincts where Democratic turnout is high and the lines are already long. And that concern isn't unfounded. Recently, a video was leaked from a presentation given by a Harris County GOP official who talks about recruiting an army of poll watchers in mostly minority areas of Houston.
Because this is where the fraud is occurring, right? So me finding poll watchers out here is not, it helps, yeah, but it's a pretty safe precinct. We've got to get folks in these suburbs out here that have, a lot of Republican folks that got to have the courage. If we don't do that, you know, this fraud down in here is really going to continue. You know, judges that, hey, Bill, I'm willing to do my precinct or the precincts around me, but I'm really not going to go down to Wheeler Baptist Church.
What's really going on with these bills in the legislature that will change how we do elections in Texas? What is driving this action? According to the Republican leadership, it's concern about ballot security or the impression in the public that our elections cannot be trusted. Here is Briscoe Kane, the chairman of the House Elections Committee and author of HB 6.
The polling that I've seen is pretty overwhelming that people have concerns, or rather would like to strengthen election integrity. What I've read is that's regardless of whether they believe something occurred, they still want to feel that their voice is being heard and that it's protected.
Kane isn't doing much to reassure the public that our elections can be trusted. After the presidential election, Kane traveled to Pennsylvania to help with Trump's efforts to overturn the results there. He was unsuccessful. So Kane says people are concerned. They feel that something is terribly wrong with the election system and it needs to be fixed. The facts don't support that, but that's how they feel. Remember this?
I am happy to report that Texas elections are in good shape.
Texas Secretary of State's Office, Director of the Elections Division, Keith Ingram.
Texas had an election that was smooth and secure.
So then where did the people who are calling for election security get the idea that we need more security, even if it means in the end fewer people are going to be allowed to vote?
And this is a disgraceful thing that was done in this country.
This is former President Trump's former attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Just days after the November election, he was speaking at the Republican National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C., with black streaks dripping down the side of his face.
You know, we use largely a Venezuelan voting machine, in essence, to count our vote. We let this happen, we're going to become Venezuela.
Giuliani was spinning the story that Trump's re-election was stolen. And at his side was Texas-based attorney Sidney Powell.
What we are really dealing with here and uncovering more by the day is the massive influence of communist money through Venezuela, Cuba, and likely China, in the interference with our elections here in the United States.
None of that is true. It was all an invention that failed over and over again in the courtrooms. There is no evidence to support these fantastic claims, but that didn't seem to bother or stop Sidney Powell from trying to sell it.
Dominion operators went in and injected votes and changed.
They run a computer algorithm on it as needed to either flip votes, take votes out.
It has been used all over the world to defy the will of people who wanted freedom.
Dominion and its minions and other state officials everywhere are apparently.
It is one huge, huge criminal conspiracy.
Powell's claims were as detailed as they were outrageous, and she promised to release all the evidence that would eventually prove everything and that would overturn the 2020 presidential election, but that never happened, not even close.
I can hardly wait to put forth all the evidence we have collected on Dominion. I'm going to release the Kraken.
On January 8th, Dominion voting machines sued Powell for defamation and asked for more than $1.3 billion in damages. On February 4th, Smartmatic voting systems filed a defamation lawsuit that accused Powell, Fox News, some individual hosts at Fox News, and Rudy Giuliani of engaging in a disinformation campaign against the company and asked for $2.7 billion in damages. In response, on March 22nd, lawyers defending Powell against Dominion's lawsuit filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. They argued that no reasonable person would conclude that the statements by Powell about the 2020 election were truly statements of fact. Instead, it was clear to reasonable persons that Powell's claims were her opinions and legal theories. Furthermore, the lawyers argued that Dominion could not prove that Powell took action with actual malice because she believed the allegations then and she believes them now. There's a major problem with this legal argument. Her lawyers are saying no reasonable person would believe Sidney Powell, and Sidney Powell believes Sidney Powell, therefore Sidney Powell is just not a reasonable person. And then there is this.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede.
Good evening. I'm Judy Woodruff on the NewsHour tonight. Chaos at the Capitol. A mob supporting and encouraging.
The mob is chanting, stop the steal, and they believe Sidney Powell.
We got to stop this steal from happening because if we don't, nobody's ever going to vote again. There's not going to be any integrity in our voting system. So everybody's probably just going to stop voting because if it's not going to matter.
There is a clear and direct line from Sidney Powell's big lie to the Capitol mob attack to the Texas Get Tough voter laws. Central to every argument being made in Texas by the Republican leadership for tougher voting laws in Texas is the need to restore confidence in our elections. But according to recent polling, Texans of both parties feel that our state elections are secure. Joshua Blank is the research director at the Texas Politics Project.
According to University of Texas, Texas Tribune polling data recorded in February, nearly 80% say that the official election results in Texas elections are accurate. And that includes both 88% of Democrats, but also, maybe surprisingly, 76% of Republicans. And so really, when we're talking about distrust of election results, more than anything, we're actually talking about a generic distrust in national elections, not necessarily the way elections are run here.
And you're saying that there's a bipartisan belief that elections in Texas are pretty good.
That's right. So, 89% of Democrats trust the results of U.S. elections. They also 88% trust the results of Texas elections. The big difference is really amongst Republicans. Again, 76% say that they think the Texas election results are accurate. Only 23% say the same of U.S. election results.
It's unusual to see that we have such strong support from both parties for the reliability of our elections.
It's sort of one of the assumptions that's being made right now, that after the presidential campaign denigrating elections, you could say 4 years of denigrating elections. But really, this is an effort that goes back over a decade that's really been, spearheaded by Republican elected officials calling into question the integrity of elections without evidence to present. But that message has been consistent. It's been clear. And even though Texans as a whole trust the results of their own elections and Republicans trust the results of Texas elections, still the plurality of Republicans want to make election laws here more difficult in that same polling. They want to make laws that govern voting more strict or left alone. Only 5% of Republicans would actually say that they want to see election laws made less strict.
So the flip side of the question, and maybe you've asked Texans this, do they think that there is voter suppression in Texas, or is it easy to vote in Texas?
So that's interesting. So, I think what we know from a polling both in February conducted, I think, in the lead up to the election, but also multiple times, and I think, something I should say here is these attitudes predate Donald Trump. I think it's very easy for especially Democrats to say, Donald Trump whipped up this frenzy about elections, but these attitudes existed even before Donald Trump took office. And what we find is that about 4 in 5 Republicans going into the 2020 election said that ineligible voters voting would be a serious problem in the upcoming election. about the same share of Democrats, about 80%, said eligible voters being prevented from voting is going to be a serious problem in the upcoming elections. And so ultimately, partisans of both sides come to this issue from very, very different perspectives. And to your second point there about, you know, how they view the voting process, Republicans as a group find voting in Texas to be a very easy process. 76% of them say that voting in Texas for them personally is very easy compared to only 45% of Democrats. And amongst those people who, let's say, are, you know, in the political independents who are not necessarily following party leaders, 49% of them say it's very easy. So significantly less than Republicans. The only other group that even comes close to matching their belief in the ease of the system are actually rural Texans. 75% of rural Texans in our polling say it's very easy to vote, compared to only 59% of suburban Texans and 54% of urban Texans. And so ultimately, you know, what you see, you know, the, if you want to contextualize the whole thing, what you say is for Republicans in the state, they think that the election results are accurate. I mean, they should. They're winning most of them. They think it's easy to vote. But ultimately, they see fraud everywhere, even without evidence, and want to see the laws tightened up going forward.
Joshua Blank is the research director at the Texas Politics Project. I would like to close with this one more time.
I am happy to report that Texas elections are in good shape.
And again, that is Texas Secretary of State Office Director of the Elections Division, Keith Ingram.
Texas had an election that was smooth and secure.
Based on the facts, the only thing wrong with Texas elections is that the state ranks near the bottom for voter participation. And the voting bills that are being passed in the legislature now are not going to change that. This has been a Texas Matters special report, The Battle for the Ballot Box, Security or Suppression. Jacob Rosati does our music and sound design. Fernanda Camarena is our editor. Dan Katz is the Texas Public Radio News Director. Check us out online at tpr.org. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.